I would like this morning to speak a sermon to you that I shared at the camp on Thursday evening. Thank you for your prayers. But as near as my records can tell, I preached a different version of this sermon about 15 years ago. So if you're like me, you probably won't remember any of it anyway. But I would have you turn, if you would, to Isaiah 24. Isaiah chapter 24, and put a bookmark there. And then make your way to 2 Samuel chapter 23. And we'll start by looking at 2 Samuel 23. And we'll read in verse 20. 2 Samuel 23:20. Then Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done mighty deeds, killed the two sons of Ariel of Moab. Now, we don't know what this is, but they did. They knew. Because apparently these two sons of Ariel of Moab were champions in and of themselves. And this man Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, killed not one of them, but both of them. But that's not all. It says he also went down and killed a lion in the middle of a pit on a snowy day. Now, I don't know if you all have read that verse before and wondered what was going on there. I did. Questions come to mind like, what's a lion doing in a pit in the first place? And what is Benaniah doing? Well, I mentioned at the camp that I'm going to do what you're never supposed to do, and that's start a sermon with a speculation. But the commentators speculate on it, and so if they can speculate, so can I, and I can just add mine to theirs. Some of the commentators say, well, this lion was in a cave. He went into a cave because of the snow, and Benaniah went into the cave as well because of the snow. And the encounter took place as a result of that. But I don't hold that view. It doesn't seem satisfying to me. Then someone else said, well, this pit was a cistern, a dried up cistern, and the lion got somehow fell down in there, and Benaniah went in and killed him on a snowy day. I kind of don't find that very satisfying either, although I respect their opinion. It's speculation. They can speculate however they want. But here's my speculation. My speculation is that pit was dug on purpose to catch a lion. And then that pit was covered over again to catch an enemy soldier who would come along unsuspecting, fall into that pit, and lo and behold, here's a lion to tear him limb from limb. And you can imagine what that would do to the morale of the troops. Every corner they turned, every step they took on the way to a battle, they would be worried about falling into another pit themselves and being eaten by a lion. So that's my speculation there. This pit was intentional. It was a trap. And as far as Benaniah, I don't know what to say about that guy, but there are ways to kill a lion that you find down in a pit without ever having to go down in there. I mean, you could shoot him with arrows, you could make a pincushion out of him with spears, and be safe up around the edge of the pit. So why would Benaniah go down in there and slay this lion? And I think it was to accomplish a feat, to prove something. I jokingly said to the congregation there on Thursday night, it's kind of like Benaniah said, here, guys, hold my cloak and watch this. And he went down in there and encountered that lion and killed it. And when he came out, they would say, that was pretty impressive. That'll gain you a spot in the top three. So I think maybe that was kind of what happened there, although I don't have any way to prove it, but it would be an incredible feat. You know, you take on a lion in an open field, you've got room to maneuver and put objects between yourself and him and not be caught off balance and so on. But if you go down into a pit, it's a fight to the death. There's only one of them that are going to survive. And not only that, we're given this little detail that the ground would have been, the footing underfoot, the ground would have been slippery. It was a snowy day. So it was an incredible feat. So what I want to highlight today in the topic of this sermon is snares and pits and traps. And the sermon is for the purpose of awareness. Someone said to be forewarned is to be forearmed. Now there are three verses in Isaiah 24 that capture the feeling of this topic. And in Isaiah 24, beginning with verse 16, woe to me, woe to me, alas for me. He says it three times there. And every one of those have an exclamation mark after them. The treacherous deal treacherously, and the treacherous deal very treacherously. That word treacherous means unfaithful, deceitfully. Verse 17, terror and pit and snare confront you, O inhabitant of the earth. Then it will be that he who flees the report of disaster will fall into the pit, and he who climbs out of the pit will be caught in the snare. The scary New Testament version of this is 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, where Paul is warning Timothy to realize this, that in the last days, perilous, difficult, fierce times will come in the last days. And then he goes on to say in verse 2, for men will be a certain way. And there's a list there of all of the characteristics of men in this last day that make these days perilous days. And one of the characteristics in verse 4 is treacherous. People will be treacherous, betrayers, unfaithful, traitors. And not only that, reckless, rash, they plunge headlong into it. So fierce times, perilous times in the day that we live in now, partly because men are treacherous. Well, when we talk about snares and traps and pits, I want to talk about them under these headings. The first one is the nature of snares and traps and pits. Then I'll give some examples. And then lastly, some tips on avoidance. So first, the nature of snares and traps and pits. Well, three ideas or feelings accompany this biblical imagery of a trap. And one is, it's those who were not expecting it that the trap captured. No one deliberately walks into a trap. There's always unsuspecting, even an animal. Unsuspecting gets caught in the trap. Secondly, there's virtually no chance of escape once they're entrapped, because that's the whole design of the trap. It's designed to hold the prey once it gets it. And then thirdly, because the trap itself is camouflaged, what initially appeared innocent and harmless proved to be the capture of the animal or the individual. Those three feelings right there accompany this imagery of a trap in the Bible. Well, first off, when we talk about the nature of traps and snares and pits, I would say this. They're set by someone. There's someone behind it. You remember that cartoon, and I'm dating myself here, I'm sure, the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. When I was growing up, I liked that cartoon a lot. Wile E. Coyote was incessantly setting traps to try and catch that Roadrunner, and the comedy was they always backfired. But someone sets traps persistently. They're conceived, they're arranged, they're executed by someone. And it's a part of the epic conflict of good and evil in this world, the children of God and the children of Satan. And there's great potential for entrapment wherever we turn. There's no place that's safe. A snare might be set before you, even in a meeting like this. There might be a trap set for you. Isaiah 24, woe to me, woe to me. He says, terror, pit, and a snare confront you. If you get out, if you flee the report of disaster, that's the terror part. You know, sometimes animals are funneled into a trap and they're driven there by fear, panic. So the one who flees the report of disaster falls into the pit. And he who climbs out of the pit is caught in the snare. There's no place that's safe. Satan is depicted as a lion for his strength and a serpent for his subtlety and a dragon for his fierceness. And he's aided by followers that are legions in multitude. We heard of the legions in heaven that are worshiping and praising God. There are legions that are behind Satan helping him. In every way, his agents, and sometimes it's even people, pawns on a grand chessboard, as it were, those that are duped by the devil. Paul warned Timothy in 2 Timothy 2 about those that are in the snare of the devil being captured by him to do his will, and they don't even realize it. He says they need to come to their senses and escape. So traps are set by someone. We heard of one this morning. We heard of the Pharisees that were plotting. The Pharisees that were plotting against the Lord Jesus. They wanted to put him to death. Well, Matthew 22 tells us they were trying to figure out how they could trap him. And what he said, plotting. There's a snare, there's a trap. Satan entered Judas in the upper room, and what did Judas do? He went out and set a trap. How he could take, they could take Jesus into custody in the middle of the night when there weren't any crowds around. It's interesting. There are always traps set, and they're set by someone. Well, another characteristic of traps, they're baited. Amos asks a rhetorical question. He says, does a bird fall into a trap on the ground when there is no bait in it? Well, obviously, he doesn't. The trap has to be baited. So traps are baited. The prey is lured in by an overwhelming desire, either for pleasure or profit or some advantage. And it's all according to the tastes and the habits and the situation of the individual. The two neighbors that live behind me a couple of years ago decided that they were going to put out Japanese beetle traps, a couple of them in each of their yards. And that Japanese beetle trap, you know, has a really small bait in it. And all of the Japanese beetles that are looking for love are attracted to that bait. And they hauled out 5-gallon buckets of dead beetles every single day. And I didn't have very many beetles in my yard because they all went to theirs. But you know, in all of that, there was not one honeybee found. It was all Japanese beetles. Honeybees weren't attracted to that at all. And so the idea is, what might be a snare for you, what might be bait in a trap for you, might not be bait for me at all. I might not be affected by it. I might not be tempted to get rich, but you might. I might not be tempted in this particular area or that, but you might. So a trap is baited, and it's baited according to the desires, tastes, and the habits of the individual. Someone said Satan knows his birds well and he knows how to catch them. So traps are set by someone. Traps are baited. Traps are hidden. There's an element of subtlety there. Craftiness, concealment, camouflage. When we moved to Missouri, I set about to make some islands in my yard and plant flowers in them because I like the flowers. Well, the rabbits liked that too. They were eating everything. And so I wanted to trap these rabbits. I got a live trap. And I set the trap and I baited it. And I camouflaged it with some evergreens. And I never did end up catching a rabbit in it because rabbits, I guess, in Sedalia are more wily than they are in other places. But I never did get a rabbit. But nonetheless, the idea is still sound. Camouflage, subtlety. Traps are set, traps are baited, traps are hidden. And the devil is much better at it than I am. We're told in 2 Corinthians 11, the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety. All the way back in the garden. Genesis 3 account says, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was of delight to the eyes and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate, and she gave it also to her husband with her, and he ate. Paul says the woman, being deceived, fell into transgression. That's the idea of falling into a pit. And has there ever been a greater pitfall than that one? All the way back in the garden, in a perfect utopia, before sin had entered into the world, and Eve was tempted and fell. So here was a trap deliberately set by the enemy. It was baited, looked good for food, desirable, delight to the eyes. And it was camouflaged. It had the appeal to it that it was beneficial. It would make you wise. And so you see the trap right there. It's all set. The wise man of Proverbs 1 says it's useless to spread the bait in the sight of any bird. You hide it. You camouflage it. David said they talk of laying snares secretly and they say, who can see them? So here's a trap, hidden, camouflaged. And there's always, they always involve a deliberate deception, some type of deception. Those people that hunt waterfowl, they use decoys. They put out these fake ducks and it lures in the live ducks. They feel comfortable landing right there because here are some of our friends down there. Lo and behold, it's a deception. There are false brethren, wolves that are dressed like sheep. Things are not always what they seem. In fact, Paul said in 2 Corinthians 11, where he cataloged all of those dangers that he faced, he included dangers from false brothers. Well, when Tyndale was alive in his day, in the spring of 1535, there was a man named Henry Phillips. And Henry Phillips arrived in Antwerp, Belgium, where Tyndale had been hiding. And having learned of the failure to arrest Tyndale, Phillips took it on himself to betray Tyndale in hopes of getting some notoriety and a financial reward. Tyndale, you know, was translating the Bible from Latin into the common language of the people. We have English speaking, English reading Bibles on our laps right now that we owe a debt of gratitude to Tyndale for, humanly speaking. But by the end of May, Henry Phillips had made contact with Tyndale and obtained his confidence. And this is what he noted about Tyndale, that he was simple and not expert in the wily subtleties of this world. And before Tyndale knew what was taking place, Phillips set an ambush for his newfound friend, and two English spies made the arrest. And in due time, it resulted in the strangulation and the burning at the stake of William Tyndale. Deception, traps. Traps are set by someone, they're baited, they're hidden. They involve a deliberate deception. And then, lastly, they're suddenly sprung. They happen quickly. They snap quickly. They fall quickly. They spring up quickly. Nothing happens slow. It's fast, suddenly. Ecclesiastes 9:12, like fish caught in a treacherous net and birds trapped in a snare, so the sons of men are ensnared at a treacherous time when it suddenly falls on them. Men get trapped suddenly. They often spring from a dangerous familiarity with evil. We get comfortable with it, and a trap is set and sprung. I heard the story Dad was telling about my great-grandpa. My great-grandpa Leiter would be his grandpa. And he wanted to shoot crows out of the back of his house. But crows, you know, are very wary birds. And if there's crows on the ground, they have sentries up in the treetops. And they have really keen eyesight. And it's hard to ever get an opportunity even to shoot them. But as the story goes, as I understand it, my grandpa came up with an idea. And first he would crack the door, the back door of the house. And of course the birds would fly. They would see it. Well, after a period of time, they got used to the back door being cracked open and nothing happening. So then he decided to stick a broomstick through the cracked door, so there was a broomstick pointing out. And of course, they would fly, you can imagine. But then over time, they got used to the door cracked open and a broomstick poking out. And then, of course, you know where I'm going with this. There came a day when the door was cracked open, but it wasn't the usual broomstick, it was the rifle, but because they were accustomed to it, they were comfortable with it, he ended up being able to get his crow. So that's the principle there, a dangerous familiarity with evil. We get comfortable around it. We're so immersed in it. And a trap is set under in situations like that. The trap is often fatal for the prey. By that I mean Satan is no believer in catch and release. If he gets you trapped, you're trapped, and it's your life that he's seeking. David said, "They seek my life and lay snares for me." And there are so many that the devil has gotten. I think, and you can think of, people that at one time in your life you respected and thought they were following God and had fellowship with them. There are people that I've had fill this pulpit. And now you look for them, and where are they? They've gone off into the world. They're not even following God now. They're not even going to church. What happened? Well, at least in some way we could say they got caught in a trap. And that was the end of them. So those are some of the characteristics. traps and snares and pits. Here are some examples. And I'll need to proceed fairly quickly through these, so I won't be giving all of the references for verses that I use, but I'm just trusting that you will recognize that you've seen those verses before and you'll say, oh yeah. Well, Proverbs 29 says, a man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. Flattery. In Deuteronomy 12, Moses was warning the people not to be ensnared, to follow them. And you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods, that I may also do likewise? Here the Israelites found themselves in pagan societies, surrounded by pagan nations, who worshipped gods that were sensual and immoral. And here's the warning. Dangerous curiosity. Don't even ask how they serve their gods. Joshua warned the people, if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations which remain among you and intermarry with them so that you associate with them and they with you, they will be a snare and a trap to you, he said. And Israel continually fell into that failure. There's the adulteress. Several different places. We're told in Ecclesiastes that more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets and whose hands are chains. One who's pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. The adulteress hunts for the precious life, we're told in another place. And there's even a description of the one, the naive one, that gets taken by her. All at once, he follows her. And as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught in a trap, until an arrow pierces through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare. You see all this imagery here in regard to this adulteress. So he does not know that it will cost him his life. And in another place, the mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit, and he who is cursed of the Lord will fall into it. Then there are words that we say, rash commitments. It's a snare to rashly say it's holy, and then to reflect only after making vows. We say we commit to something, then we say, well, on second thought. Rash commitments, promises. There's covetousness, discontentment that can be a snare. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare. A snare is a trap set by the devil right there. And many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. There are times of overwhelming misfortune and sorrow and grief or loss in which we're tempted to think poorly of God. It's a trap. God's providence. We think poorly of it. Satan had a design for Job. It was overwhelming misfortune, sorrow, grief, or loss, and then Satan's design was that he will curse you to your face. So in those times, we need to be careful and be on the lookout. There are entanglements in the affairs of everyday life. That's a net, entangled in a lot, in all of these affairs of life. There's the fear of man. It brings a snare. That's a popular one that we're aware of. The fear of man brought a snare to the disciples. They all ran and left Jesus in his moment of need in the garden when he was arrested. And Peter denied, because of the fear of man, that he ever even knew him. Denied three times. So fearing what others may do to us and caring too much about what others think of us cloud our judgment, influence our decisions. Death can spring suddenly like an unexpected trap. And we'd be caught not ready to die. Jesus warned Luke 21:34, be on your guard, that's beware, so that your hearts will not be weighed down with dissipation, which is loose living, and drunkenness, which is indulgence, and the worries of life, which are distractions, so that that day will not come on you suddenly like a trap. So death can spring suddenly. So those are some examples, a handful of them. There are so many in the Bible that part of the difficulty with this sermon was determining what to leave out. There's so many references to snares and traps. So lastly, I've mentioned avoidance. We've got the nature of traps. We've got some examples from the Bible. Now here are some suggestions for avoidance of snares and traps. And the first one is recognize God in it. From Him, nothing is hidden. If our only help is human ability, without a doubt, we're going to be taken. We're so vulnerable, and the enemy is so expert that if God doesn't give help, then we'll be taken for sure. The psalm writer in Psalm 31, I believe it was David, said, you take me out of the net which they have hidden for me, for you're my refuge. So here's someone caught, but he's taken out of it. He's spared by the grace of God. I think of that Psalm 124. We sing the song about it, being escaped like a bird out of the snare of the fowler. The snare's been broken and we've escaped. God does that. Our help is in our savvy ability to sniff out the trap. Is that what it says? It doesn't say that. Our help is in the name of the Lord, who made heaven and earth. Blessed be the Lord. So the gratitude comes whenever the escape is seen, and then we see what we have escaped from. The snare that we've escaped from, and we see the hand that broke the snare and set us free. It's God. Recognize God. Nothing is hidden from Him. And then I suggest that we submit to every urge to pray. It seems like to me that God often gives a spirit of prayer in the face of danger. Pray continually for the exposure of snares, so that we don't become entrapped. Pray for a discerning spirit. David prayed this prayer, and it's one that we could easily make it our own. And it's found in Psalm 141 in verse 9 and 10. He says, keep me from the jaws of the trap which they have set for me, and from the snares of those who do iniquity. And let the wicked fall into their own nets while I pass safely by. That's a very valuable prayer. You and I can adopt that for ourselves. Psalm 141, 9 and 10. Pray for providence to cause the exposure of traps. You remember Paul, when he was first converted as Saul of Tarsus, he was in Damascus and there was a plot. They were watching the gates day and night so that they might put him to death. But that plot was exposed. The plot became known to Saul. And what was the answer? They let Saul out of a window in a basket in the middle of the night from the wall. And he escaped. Providentially, it became known to him. If that weren't enough, there was another one. In Acts 23, providentially, Paul's nephew heard of their ambush and went and told the apostle. There were those assassins that they had sworn they weren't going to eat and drink until Paul was dead. That's pretty resolute, pretty serious. But providentially, Paul's nephew heard of it, heard of the plan, went and told him, and he He escaped. We should pray for providences like that, because God works in that way, exposes something. And lo and behold, it was a trap and we escaped. Well, we don't want to be naive, unsuspecting. Those are the ones whose hearts are deceived. The unsuspecting, we're told in Romans 16:18, by smooth and flattering speech. Satan, he takes advantage of us, and we're not ignorant of his schemes, said Paul. He takes advantage. Well, in times of vulnerability, a trap is often set. The devil is an opportunist. And keep that in mind if you get anything out of this sermon. The devil is an opportunist. He looks for the right time. In times of vulnerability, I already spoke of in one of my other points about excessive sorrow and grief and despair and disappointment, and then a trap is set. Well, the psalm writer in Psalm 142 said, "When my spirit faints within me, you know my way, and in the path where I walk, they have hidden a trap for me." Here, a fainting spirit produced an opportunity for a trap to be set in the path that he walked. And he said in Psalm 57, "They set a net for my steps when my soul was bowed down, and they dug a pit in my way, but they've fallen into it themselves." Here's a pit dug, a net set at a time when his soul was bowed down. The devil's an opportunist. He knows those occasions of vulnerability, and now is a good time to set a trap, and I can catch them now. Another tip, don't trust your own personal judgment alone. Seek counsel, because we lose objectivity when situations are emotionally charged. Keep your distance. The surest way to avoid falling into a pit is to stay away from the edge of it. I think of the temptress spoken of in Proverbs. And the application is real even for us in this day and age, at the office, at the gym, on the computer. The temptress says, "Keep your way far from her. And do not go near the door of her house, and do not stray into her paths, nor let her capture you with her eyelids." Captured, caught in a trap. It happens all the time. Here's the guy who's having some disagreements with his wife, and he's at the water cooler, and here's the secretary that's sympathetic and willing to listen to him, and before you know it, here's a trap set, and off he goes, and the marriage is in trouble. Keep your distance. Someone said, "A fish is not free while a hook is in its mouth, no matter how much line it pulls out. And a horse escaped with a halter is easily caught again." We've got to shake that hook out. We've got to cast off that halter. Well, those are a few tips. Now, I want to close with one anecdote from the life of John G. Payton. He was the missionary, to the South, the cannibals in the South Sea Islands back in the 1800s. John G. Payton was from Scotland, kept several goats as a source of milk supply. And one day he heard a desperate bleating among his goats, as if they were being killed or tortured, and he rushed to the goat house. And instantly a band of armed cannibals sprang from the bush, surrounded him, and raised their clubs. He had fallen into their trap. "You've escaped from us many times," they said, "but now we're going to kill you." Well, lifting his hands and his eyes toward heaven, Peyton committed his cause to the Lord, whose servant he was. And as he prayed, the divine presence overshadowed him, and his heart was filled with a tender reassurance, and the cannibals slipped away one after another. And this is his quote, his conclusion on the whole matter. He says, "Thus Jesus restrained them once again. His promise is a reality. He's with his servants to support and bless them even unto the end of the world." That's our way of escape right there. The Lord Jesus, his kindness to restrain. So in view of all of these things, we're cast on him. Nevertheless, be on your guard. Traps are set by someone. They're baited. They're camouflaged. They spring suddenly. And there are multitudes of examples in the Bible in which men better than me have been caught in traps and ensnared. Well, amen. Let's pray, shall we? And then we'll be dismissed.